Welcome to the Authority Playbook. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and today we're talking about the strategies that help you stand out, be seen, and be heard. You're watching Now Media Television. Welcome to the Authority Playbook. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and today I want to talk about a kind of authority that goes beyond visibility, personal branding, or market positioning. I want to talk about authority built through mission, trust, coalition, and impact. My guest today is Melissa Madah, Chief Program Officer of Rise Alliance for Children. She's an expert on children's rights and protection, early childhood development, and serves as a child advocate in the U.S. legal system. Under her leadership, Rise Alliance for Children has grown to serve children across 9 countries and counting, making sure all our kids have the safety, structure, and learning environment they need to thrive. Under her leadership, it's been an awesome ride for her. Melissa, thank you so much for what you do. It's a meaningful environment, it's a meaningful mission, and truly appreciate what you do, and welcome to the Authority Playbook.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
In this opening segment, I want to establish Melissa, her leadership journey, her connection, her experience to the broader idea of authority. The conversation should show how credibility is built when a leader combines personal conviction with operational discipline, strategic partnerships, and a mission that people can truly trust. Melissa, when you think about authority in the social impact space, what does that word mean to you?
That's a big word, hey? you know, for me, authority is not just about power. It is about the trust people place in me, in us, every day to make decisions and guide action. I think sometimes traditional authority may place more emphasis on the title a person holds, and that may give a certain, you know, assigned authority. But holding a title without relationships can become more about power and control than trust and shared purpose. And I think in the social impact space, we strive to build that relationship, and authority is earned.
In my opening, I kind of talked a little bit about what RISE is. Can you, in your own words, just help our viewers understand maybe a little bit more in detail of what you do and what your mission really is?
Yep. RISE Alliance for Children exists to bring quality early learning for young children across the world. We do that through training educators and adults around the children to ensure that all kids have access to play, learn, and thrive. We currently work in 9 countries. Right now I'm in Haiti working with our Haitian team. We're doing some training with a partner organization here, and that's what we're committed to do.
So we all grew up and going to school and colleges and learning things, and we all bring things into our cultures. What do you think that was the one thing that affected you or impacted you most to do what you do today?
Gosh, I think the one thing that impacted me most, I would say, is that after university, I joined the Peace Corps and lived in West Africa for 2 years in a mud hut in the middle of nowhere, the only American English-speaking person for miles around. And it kind of forced me to have a different perspective on who I am, how I fit into community, what are my skills and experiences, what do I bring to the table and what do I need? And so that's provided the foundation for everything I've done going forward.
Well, first, thank you for your service. That was great to hear. And what got you into RISE and being able to be on the mission that you are to be protected and expand on what you currently are doing?
Yeah, thank you. So from the Peace Corps, what I discovered was a joy, a passion, was really to empower, work with closely, and amplify the voice of local leaders. It's a voice that can often get drowned out And so from my work in West Africa, I joined an organization working in Mozambique and then joined Rise Alliance to build programs in Haiti and have gone through there. But really my job is about building local teams to be able to identify the needs in their community, specifically around what do children need to learn. Often that is, you know, a hungry child can't learn. So how do we bring the kind of community awareness around ensuring schools are safe places where children have access to learn without fear, with their bellies full, and with joy, really kind of bringing that joy into the foundation of learning at the preschool level. And it's truly a privilege to be able to do that.
Again, thank you for what you do. I think it's a great organization, and what you do is should be recognized more thoroughly throughout the world as well. But as you continue to expand, and you now are in 9 countries, what keeps you driving, and what makes you not lose that heart or lose the momentum that you currently have, and the enthusiasm? What keeps you going?
For me personally, what keeps me going is seeing the development of our teams, our partners, our work in all of our countries, celebrating the small wins every day. I say it a lot, but this work is not a sprint. It is a marathon. It takes everyone committed to a shared goal to get the job done. And so the kind of day-to-day nuances, the cultural flair that gets brought in, like when you're visiting each country, they all might have a similar problem, but each context, each culture is handling it differently, and the outcomes are the same. Children are learning, adults are learning, kids are being connected. So it's truly, I think, just day-to-day, there's small wins to be celebrated, and that's what keeps us going.
I don't want to minimize your impact, and so hopefully I framed this next question okay. But when you go from country to country and you see different things, do you have a framework that you try to implement within each country, or is it each country is totally reworked?
Yeah, you know, we do have a like overarching framework when we enter a country. I mean, in the countries where we work now, there's government alignment on the universal access to preschool education. And there is kind of more or less an awareness and understanding, a push toward the importance of play-based learning in that preschool kindergarten age range. And when you have the ministry level, the government buy-in on that, that kind of then frames the work. At least you've got the policy, and now you start building from the ground up the proof that it works, that there's a model that can be applied to every situation. And that's where there's overlap.
You mentioned earlier it's a marathon. So in hypothetically, when you maybe let's say talking about Haiti, where you're at right now, from the time you stepped in to the time you actually start to maybe have an impact with children and the learning, is what's the time frame?
I mean, honestly, there's two different, there's many time frames, right? But yeah. With kids, you see an impact quite immediately, which is also kind of drives the joy for the work. Young children are resilient, and they may experience trauma and hardship, which interrupts their learning and their development, especially in listening and language. But even 6 months of consistent routine in a safe space where they're engaged in guided play, you can see the language development improve, the social connections happening. Kids who were once withdrawn, eyes cast down, afraid to engage, become whole new children. And so at that level, the change happens within, 6 to 9 months, 1 year of time. Now systems changes the marathon, right? Like how to get from a school in Haiti to a community in Haiti to now the Haitian national government education system aligned on play-based learning and implementing across all schools. That's where that marathon comes in.
Yeah, that's probably the most challenging aspect of what you do.
Yeah.
When you first joined, Melissa, the organization, you come in kind of thinking you're going to do one thing, and you wind up doing something different. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey and what you tackled and what were the biggest obstacles and actually also success stories?
Yeah. You know, I joined RISE after living in Haiti for a few years. I came right after the earthquake of 2010, met the founder of the organization, and kind of got hired in to start programs in Haiti, which meant finding a local team, showing kind of working with them to identify the needs of the children in the community, and then slowly then start building trust with the schools, bringing the play and the whole thing. I went then from living in Haiti for 5 years, building the team, handing over full responsibility of the program, to then working from headquarters. And that's now where I'm working with all 9 countries as we continue to grow. I thankfully speak a number of languages. I enjoy language. I enjoy how language and culture connect to form ideas. And so each country we move into, context we evolve into, allows that opportunity to really listen and learn. The problem may be the same everywhere, but it isn't solved the same way.
Was it a big transition going from doing the work or being involved with the kids into the corporate level?
Yeah, that was probably the hardest shift for me. Was at the ground level, you get that day to day kind of joy seeing the work firsthand. Being that kind of step or two removed from it is harder. But that's where I started to realize that need for my position to be empowering our teams to do the work, that I'm not the leader out front doing this. I've got 9 country teams who are phenomenal leaders in their context doing the work. And my job now is to support them to make sure they have everything they need to meet the challenges that they face day to day.
And we talked about earlier a little about authority, but authority, trust, you're in a foreign country. And each one's going to be a little different. What can you tell our listeners kind of what you do and how you go about it to build that relationship within those foreign countries?
It starts with connection. In our current countries, we have a local team who are working, and so they guide us on those relationships we should form, what partnerships to build, how to reach into the government level to build those systems relationships. When entering a new country, we often try to enter with a personal connection. Who do we know and trust that could introduce us to a trusted partner or a trusted person to be that guide for us? Because we're outsiders, we don't have all the answers, we don't know the context, right? So it starts with that, then building trust from there and moving forward.
I want to ask you to name the country, but help us. What was the most difficult relationship building that authority that you actually had, and what did you do to overcome it?
I won't say the country, but I would say that sometimes being a woman in a position of leadership isn't always recognized immediately, as they're looking for the male counterpart or the one who's more in charge. In that context, often it's again kind of being patient to listen, to learn, to speak when our teams are ready to hear, and slowly winning the confidence and the trust of the locals is what works. So I can say without a shadow of a doubt that every country, culture, context that we work in, that is the key. That's the secret sauce, is listen more than you speak.
I think that those same things could be said right here in the good old USA. I think it's still a challenge here. Yeah. We tend to talk more than what we listen, and I think what the old expression is, God gave us 2 ears and 1 mouth, so we're supposed to be listening more than we are talking, correct?
There you go. There you go.
So thank you, Melissa. This is such an important reminder. Authority is not just about being known. It's about being trusted with something that matters. In Melissa's case, that means building systems, partnerships, and momentum around children whose futures depend on sustained action. When I come back, I want to talk about what it takes to lead change at scale and how to build coalitions, move through the complexity, and create impact that lasts. I'm Jeff Brandeis. We'll be right back. We'll be right back with more insights and frameworks to help you elevate your brand and your influence. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and this is the Authority Playbook on Now Media Television. Let's dive deeper. Welcome back to the Authority Playbook. I'm Jeff Brandeis. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and in Spanish. You're on the move, on the go? Catch the podcast version at www.nowmedia.tv. I'm back with Melissa, Chief Alliance of Rise Alliance for Children. And we're talking about how mission-driven leaders build authority by creating trust, alignment, and real-world impact. Before the break, we looked at Melissa's leadership journey and the growth of Rise Alliance for Children, covering 9 countries and counting. Now I want to dive a little deeper into the leadership mechanics behind that kind of growth, because purpose alone is not enough. Purpose has to become strategy, partnership, and execution. So in this segment, we're going to focus on coalition building, strategic growth, and the leadership discipline required to scale social impact. I want to connect Melissa through nonprofit experiences to lessons that business leaders can apply, where you build trust, aligning different stakeholders, communicating a clear mission, and sustaining momentum when the work is complex. Melissa, you have experience in government, coalition building. What have you learned about bridging or bringing different people, institutions, or communities around onto one mission?
Yeah, thank you. That's also a big question, hey? Coalition building is also a long process and not always easy. I think effective coalition building really starts from within. I think when we have a strong and diverse local team that's able to listen to each other and values different perspectives, they become the foundation. And then from there, the local team then builds trust with partners and brings others into the work in a meaningful way. Then my role, or the role of other organizations, would be then creating the conditions for the team to succeed. So we're not necessarily the one driving the decisions. We're putting the right people in the right place to be able to do that, to understand the culture, context, and find those trusted individuals to build coalitions with.
So working with coalitions is a little different leadership strategy than driving your own internal structure. Can you describe some of those challenges and what you've done to overcome some of those?
Yeah, defining clear roles, I think, is the first step, right? In a coalition, you've got a lot of different organizations or members who are coming in with different agendas. So really setting one goal that everybody can get behind. And in our line of work, that can sometimes be easy, it's for the children. And so when we set the children or the teachers as our goal, our driving light, then everyone can align with their strengths around how we reach the common goal. So, bringing play-based learning into the school system, you need toy maker, like I'm thinking about Ethiopia, for example, building a coalition there meant, you know, where do we find children's books? Where do we find quality learning materials? How do we get Ministry of Education, the Bureau, like bought in on the bringing the materials into the classroom and allowing teachers to get the training? And it requires everyone to be built playing from their strengths.
A lot of that, what you just described, honestly, could be done or needs to be done in everywhere, every business. If you're talking about a partnership, or you're talking about just even internally, I think that, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs or a lot of business owners, when they reach out, defining roles and responsibilities, tracking results, and being able to communicate really at the end of the day is honestly, it's a missing piece in today's environment. There's a process or a playbook that you kind of follow to kind of make sure that the what the communication is being done, the structure is being implemented?
Yeah. Again, from my perspective, I think coalition building is a long-term goal, a long-term outcome. And it's not just about getting people in a room to quickly solve a problem. It's about getting people in the room to start the conversation. And so the kind of the playbook, if you will, is finding who are the right players to be in the room, always making room at the table for voices to emerge, that it doesn't become a closed and stale conversation, but that it evolves and moves with the times. Flexibility is part of that. Also the understanding that, you know, we want a straight line. The fastest way to get somewhere is a straight line. But in this line of work, the road is often curvy and we don't know what's coming down the pike, right? We don't have that clear vision always. And so rolling with those curves and seeing the beauty in what can emerge, even if it's not what we immediately thought it would be, is critical. It allows for that opportunity for life and breath and movement to happen within a coalition.
Take the small win and continue to build on it and make it happen. You know, when...
Yep.
Yep. Your mission, it's urgent. It's obviously the needs are real. It's human beings that are being affected, especially our children or the children in the countries. How do you begin to prioritize what to tackle first and what needs to happen, you know, throughout the sequence of building out what you need to get built out?
Yeah, it's hard, you know, that what they often call it mission drift when you start to, you know, land in a country and you start doing more than what you expected you would do. But that's just it. Like suddenly you see so much need for Rise Alliance. And I think for many organizations in social impact, it is staying true to your North Star, to know that the problem that you're tackling, the solutions that you're framing with local guides, local trusted players, that has the ripple effect to change everything else around them. So for us, building that foundation, we have such a short amount of time in the developing child's brain. You know, by the age of six, 90% of the brain is formed, right? So we have from birth until about age six or seven, where everything is moldable, flexible, adaptable. The foundation is ready, they're sponges. And when we can build that strong foundation of listening at language, early literacy, early math, we believe that's going to build the long-term outcomes that we want to see for kids, finishing school, getting good jobs, being community members who can give back when they're older. So finding your North Star, staying true to it, and knowing that the ripple effect of what you do matters.
What you're doing is challenging work, and you got lots of moving parts and lots of different pieces, puzzle pieces moving around. The work, it's emotional, it's complex and long-term. How do you kind of keep the people aligned and focused? Do you have any secret sauce for that?
honestly, it's about maintaining open communication and just continuing to build trust. I know that since COVID, we do a lot of things remotely, but nothing replaces the beauty of being able to sit and watch and learn from your local teams or your staff, to be able to see how they're making decisions day to day in actual time is incredible. And that's where those small wins can happen, right? We can celebrate together when we are together. I know that virtual is great. There's so many benefits of virtual connection and learning. I work virtually most of my time, but again, I think that secret sauce is the communication, the trust building, and time spent together.
I think it kind of leads into my next question is, you're in the obviously social impact world. If you were to get on stage and talk to a bunch of, or I shouldn't say a bunch of people who are entrepreneurs, what would you say or recommend them that you learned in the social space that they can use in their real world of managing their own business or starting their businesses?
You know, I'm also a business owner. So let me put that hat on for a second and say, businesses exist in communities, communities of people. Of people who work at the business, right? So none of us are immune from these principles of understanding how we connect into the fabric of society, right? So I think responsible growth, even for businesses, it's not about moving fast. It's finding and scaling what works and staying grounded in your local context. Celebrating the community, celebrating the ability to share in their joys and sorrows. So I think just kind of taking and putting the person again in place of the business, I think just remembering that we all need each other.
I think those are wise words, and I think every business owner, whether you're a small business, large business, medium business, no matter what you do, it has a definitely effect on who we are and how we perform, and it should be part of our everyday learnings and everyday practices. So I appreciate that. Thank you. Melissa, yeah. This conversation has been such a powerful reminder that authority is not only built in boardrooms, marketing campaigns, or on public platforms. It's also built in service. It's built on the ability to gather people around the mission, which you definitely have done, where you make hard decisions and keep moving toward measurable change. If people want to reach out and find you, what's the best way they can learn more about RISE and be able to get themselves involved?
Yeah, our website is rise-children.org. All of the information about our work is there. You can reach us on Facebook, LinkedIn, all at the bottom of the page. My email address is melissa@rise-children.org. So you'll find me in the Who We Are section. And please reach out. We're always eager to connect to like-minded companies, organizations, people.
That's awesome. I've learned a lot. And thank you so much again for what you do and your efforts that you put in. I'm sure it's a very challenging position, challenging job. And that's one that's a lot of people hopefully are now more aware of than they were before. For everyone watching today, I hope today's conversation challenges you to ask a deeper question. What is the purpose behind the authority I am building? Because when credibility is connected to impact, leadership becomes more than influence. It becomes responsibility. Thank you for joining me on the Authority Playbook. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and I'll see you next time as we continue building the systems, the strategies, and mindset required to lead with authority. Thanks for joining us.
We'll be right back with more insights and frameworks to help you elevate your brand and your influence. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and this is the Authority Playbook on Now Media Television. Let's dive deeper.
Welcome to the Authority Playbook. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and today I want to explore a side of authority that many entrepreneurs overlook. We talk a lot about branding, messaging, positioning, visibility, and even strategy. But what happens when the strategy is right, the opportunity is real, and something inside still pulls us back. Today's guest believes the greatest growth edge is no longer just strategy, it's the nervous system required to hold what comes next. Karen Taylor is a capacity architect and founder of Millionaire Nervous System. She's on a mission to help 1 million entrepreneurs stabilize growth through growth and expansion. With 23 years of corporate leadership experience, plus certifications in hypnosis, grief education, and change work, she helps female entrepreneurs upgrade the internal operating system driving their business. Karen, welcome to the Authority Playbook.
Thanks, Jeff. I'm so happy to be here.
Great to have you here. Karen, in this opening segment, I want to establish your authority around framework and define what capacity means for entrepreneurs. The conversation will shift from traditional growth ideas to the internal factors that drive consistency, visibility, leadership, money, and expansion. The goal is to show that building authority is not about doing more, but becoming able to hold more. So Karen, you call yourself a capacity architect. What does that mean in the practical business terms?
Yeah, great question. So if you think about a traditional architect, they're designing structures that can hold weight. That's exactly what I do, except I'm helping an entrepreneur build the infrastructure, right? The internal infrastructure to hold more growth and expansion for their business. Because to the nervous system, more often feels like a cost. But, you know, as entrepreneurs, we're wanting to expand our life, you know, to have more impact, income, influence, more peace, love, freedom. But when our nervous system feels like that's a cost, it does something really, really intelligent. It tries to mitigate that cost and it pulls us back and tries to help us, you know, reduce that perceived loss. So I just help ensure that there's a strong and open system internally so that we can remain stable under the weight of growth.
Curious, when you talk about the internal nervous system, are there signs that people are stressing out, they get nerves, they start twitching? What's a sign that they actually have or show that they're having this internal breakdown or nervous system, maybe not a breakdown?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's triggers and it can be different for everybody. You know, some people get triggered when they're in traffic and somebody cuts them off and, you know, we kind of just, we instantly kind of go into that very reactive state. And that's really conditioned in us. You know, we've been practicing the same responses over and over again in our nervous system. You know, we're always just trying to conserve energy for us. So it automates these things that we do over and over again. So when something happens, that's why we just react so quickly. It feels like, you know, just like seconds and we're reacting. And, you know, that's destabilizing to our nervous system. So we have to understand what those triggers are and then take a bit of a pause so that we can regulate ourselves back to a state of more calm.
Are the triggers something that people grow up with, they were born with, are they inherited? Where do the triggers actually come from?
Yeah, very much, you know, as we grew up in, you know, our childhood and we were, you know, told don't do that, or we tried to do something and, you know, it didn't feel good to us. It felt like, you know, it wasn't safe. And so we gave our nervous system all these instructions about how we wanted to feel. And most of them were centered around what we didn't want. And so it created this move away from strategy. And it's the internal operating system. It's kind of like the rule book. And so that was great when we were younger and, you know, we were in this protective state and moving away from things we didn't want. Like, we didn't want to be made fun of on the playground. You know, we didn't want to get yelled at by our parents. But now that we're adults and we're wanting to, again, expand our life, it's moving us away from most of the things that we want because, you know, we're wanting more in our lives. And so it doesn't become a very helpful strategy at this stage of our lives. Some of it was actually, you know, back from tribal days, we still carry some of that DNA. And if you think about at that time, you know, there was a lot of threats happening all around. You know, somebody was, you know, walking and there was a tiger around the corner. And so, you know, we've been in this very threat state and this protective state, and our world's evolved. You know, we don't, you know, walk out and have, you know, that kind of danger, that real danger, like a tiger approaching us. There's obviously lots of other dangers that we have to contend with, but we just haven't given our system the upgrade that it really needs so that it can actually help support the goals that we want to achieve.
So you help us transform and take us away from some of the things that we were born with or grew up with and kind of transform us into our, or recognize the triggers and be able to do some things differently and control our emotions and our and reflect better for our business.
Yeah, we just have to give our system an upgrade, right? Just like, you know, any computer, any system that we use, every so often we have to upgrade it so it runs as optimally as we want it to. And we have to do that with our nervous system too.
Gotcha. Now, Karen, many entrepreneurs experience a start-stop cycle. We get visible, we gain momentum, and then we tend to pull back. What's happening underneath, and what's that kind of pattern that they are experiencing?
Yeah, our brain's number one job is to predict what comes next and prepare your body to respond. If I was going to get up right now and get a glass of water, my brain's already behind the scenes thinking, what has to happen in my body to get me up off of this chair, to move me into my kitchen, to get the glass, to get the water? That's all happening, you know, at an unconscious level. We don't even know that's going on, but our brain's always doing this. So it has to predict the actions that we're going to take so it can prepare our body to respond. Every time that we go to expand beyond a threshold that is new to us, that's bigger to us, our nervous system is asking the question, is this safe? Does this feel familiar? Does this match the concept of who we believe that we are? If the answer is no, it's going to activate that protective response. It's going to pull back, slow down, create a distraction for us to stop. And that's not random. Our nervous system is getting an A+ for trying to protect us. But again, it's just we don't really need that kind of protection anymore when we're wanting to expand into, you know, more growth, you know, more impact, more influence in our life. And so, you know, we appreciate our nervous system for, you know, doing its job, you know, really, really well and how we instructed it in the past. But the start and stop cycle, there's so many people that I've talked to, and when I say those words, they're like, that's exactly how I feel. And it can be really exhausting because every time you stop and you pull back to what's more familiar and you kind of shrink back, every time you want to get going again, that you have to recreate that momentum, and it just becomes very exhaustive. And unfortunately, that's why a lot of entrepreneurs give up, because they're in that cycle back and forth and they can't really get the momentum that they really need to get their business, you know, growing and expanding to be profitable.
I think I felt that at times as well. And I think it's a natural reaction when you're starting your business, or even sometimes when you're working in a company and you're giving tasks or things, or how I like to phrase it is when you're challenged to do something different and you got to change what you've been doing for the past 5 years, 20 years, that's when the nervous system probably would kick in more than normal, correct?
Yeah, anytime there's change, right? Anytime something's new and unfamiliar, because again, new and unfamiliar was not safe to our older nervous system. And so that's really when you're going to see it is, like you said, when there's change, when we're growing to a different level, it's going to kick in. It's going to act like it's a real threat. And that's the work that we have to do to give our brain a prediction error. You know, again, it's predicting what it thinks is going to happen based on everything that's happened in the past. So it finds a match and then it predicts that the same thing's going to happen. So we have to take actions to give our brain a prediction error and show it, hey, I did this thing and I stayed safe. And you do that over and over again. And then the brain will update its prediction patterns. It will just update them in a way that's going to actually support you and not hold you back.
So is there a number of times we have to do that to retrain, retrain or reframe our brain or our nervous system?
You know, I don't know that there's a certain set number. I think change can happen much more quickly than people think once we understand the mechanics of it. And we realize that we don't have to think our way into it. We don't have to push our way into it. You know, we don't have to try harder with willpower. That's an exhausting way to approach change. And for me, I was blown away when I realized how much simpler change can really be. Once I understood, I just had to, you know, rework a few mechanics in my internal system, but I still had to take action. And I think a lot of people, you know, want to say they can change without taking action. And I've not found that to be true. The action always has to happen. So I tried, believe me, I tried to change with no action, but it didn't work.
So as an entrepreneur, and a lot of folks listening today are entrepreneurs, we always hear and we always talk to coaches who say, hey, you need a better strategy. You need better offer or better marketing, or the messaging isn't clear. When is strategy not the real issue?
I think strategy stops being the issue the moment that you know exactly what you need to do, but you're still not doing it. That's the signal, because strategy is intellectual. It lives in your head, but execution lives in your body. And just like we talked about, if your body's decided that that next level isn't safe, no amount of strategy is going to override it. You can't think your way into that. It's, again, the mechanism for change is taking new action and practicing new behaviors. Now, you may need a new strategy, you may need new marketing, better marketing, sure. You may need a better offer, better messaging around your offer, but a lot of times that's the first thing we go to change when we haven't done this work first. And so you really have to be clear on, am I not moving forward because, you know, my system's pulling me back and I'm going into those avoidant, you know, behaviors. Mine was always learning. Like, I would always retreat to learning because I'm a lifelong learner. I love to learn. So I always know that when I'm doing that, I have to really kind of like check in with myself and say, okay, you know, this is what you're doing. This is the way for the body to give you some relief from the pressure that you're feeling from taking these new actions. So I say, always make sure that, you know, you're good on this side first before you go and start tweaking your strategies and your messaging and your offers. Because that's often just another, distraction that our system's giving us to avoid doing the real work.
That's interesting. Is there one sign or one reaction that is more common that people can go, oh, I got to stop and handle this now before I move forward? What's the most common that you've seen?
Yeah, people usually have one dominant pressure point that their system's going to pull. It's like slamming on the brakes. Again, mine was learning. Some people, you know, will just kind of numb out. There's a lot of things people use to avoid kind of dealing with the uncomfortable feelings that growth brings. Scrolling on the internet or watching Netflix all day, or, you know, even some of the more unhealthy coping mechanisms, you know, drinking alcohol. Like, these are all things to avoid and mitigate those uncomfortable feelings that we're having. It shows up differently for everybody, but it's one of those things where you have to really think about what you know you should be doing to move your business forward. And if you're not doing that, then you kind of have to really check in and understand, like, what are the patterns that I'm seeing? What are the behaviors that I'm doing? And kind of, you know, just have a heart-to-heart with yourself about what's really happening.
Right. That's really profound. So thank you for sharing that. And hopefully the audience grasp all that as well. Karen, before we take a break, credibility is seen as such an important factor in our world, and people buy from people who believe is credible, that they trust and they know, like, and trust is the most common phrase. But how much authority is actually in your own internal stability?
I think it's a lot more than we realize. We've kind of been conditioned to associate authority with those external markers, and they absolutely play a role. But the way I look at it is, external credibility gets attention, but internal stability is what makes people trust you. And people don't just respond to the expertise, the credentials, or the results. And again, those are all really important. But we often respond more to the authority cues. So someone can be highly skilled, but if they don't signal that certainty and that composure and that self-regulation, people aren't going to want to follow them. If you think about it, you know, in a time of crisis, you know, who do you want leading you? You know, you want somebody who's is composed and, you know, who is, you know, presenting themselves with, you know, this really stable internal system. And that's, you know, what you're seeing externally too. So people, you know, trust the person who appears most regulated and certain and an internally resourced. That's the person that we feel safest to follow.
That's awesome. That's really very powerful. Because authority is not just about being seen. It's about being able to stay present once more people are watching.
Yeah,
when I come back with Karen, I'm sorry?
Yeah, I said absolutely.
When I come back with Karen Taylor, I'm going to dive a little deeper into regulation, AI a little bit, visibility, and why the leaders who can stay grounded may have the greatest advantage in the next era of business. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more insights and frameworks to help you elevate your brand and your influence. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and this is the Authority Playbook on Now Media Television. Let's dive deeper.
Welcome back to the Authority Playbook. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and in Spanish. You're on the road, on the move? Catch the podcast version at www.nowmedia.tv. I'm back with Karen Taylor, founder of Millionaire Nervous System, and we are talking about what it really takes to build authority that lasts. Before the break, we explored the growth is not always a strategy problem. Now I want to talk about regulation, visibility, money, AI, and the very real pressure that comes when a founder begins to step into a larger role. This segment should turn the nervous system conversation into action authority building insight. I want to explore how regulation becomes a leadership advantage in the marketplace, shaped by AI, faster content cycles, and pressure to be visible. This discussion should help entrepreneurs stabilize through expansion, hold bigger opportunities, and build a brand that does not collapse under growth. Karen, you say regulation is the revolution. What does that mean for entrepreneurs building authority right now?
Yeah, so we are living in really genuinely interesting times, and our nervous system is going to play a really pivotal role in several ways. So technology has already outpaced our nervous system's ability to keep up. Every day, you know, there's more content being produced, right? Because it's easier to produce it with AI. There's new tools. I mean, every time I open my email, like there's, you know, new training to learn these tools. The tools are being upgraded so frequently. Just, you know, when you think you have learned one, they get an upgrade and you need to learn it again. So that can cause our system to get dysregulated very, very quickly. And when we're this, you know, dysregulated and we're overwhelmed with so much coming at us so fast, our system's going to completely shut down. And that's not going to be very helpful for us to actually learn these tools, because these tools are going to help give us a competitive edge. So regulation is going to be so important so that we are able to stay, you know, in that state of calm, so that we can actually take in some of this new information and learn these new tools in a way that's going to help us work more efficiently and effectively, so that we can stay competitive. Because it's not going to take very long for people to fall behind if their nervous system is just completely offline and shut down. Things are changing so fast that people will fall behind. So stabilizing your nervous system through all this change is going to be really important. It goes deeper than efficiency, though. I think that our greatest human capabilities are curiosity and creativity and imagination. And when we're in a constricted state and when we're in a state of fear, creativity goes offline. Because if you think about it, when our ancestors, again, tribal days, when they were approaching a real danger, they couldn't have you know, 50 different options to think through. You know, they had to have like one or two. So perspective gets very narrow. And when we think about AI taking on more of the routine work and automating more of the routine tasks, work is going to change. What we work on is going to change, and it's going to require us to have a much more expansive perspective to think about how to solve different problems, how to create different ways of doing things. And we need our human capabilities to be operating at full potential. We need to be in that state of flow. So the nervous system helps to make sure that, you know, we're not constricted, we're not shut down, we're in this open, receptive state. And think about, you know, the work that we're doing today. You know, a lot of people are working 9-to-5 jobs and they don't really love their job. And so I see this as a great invitation for us to step into work that feels more meaningful to us. You know, there's so much suffering happening in the world, and we all say, you know, we wish we could change that. We wish this would be different, but it's really hard to get behind that with your time and energy and resources when you're working all day and then you're managing a family or outside obligations. So I think that AI is going to give us the gift of time, which I think is the greatest gift, so that we'll actually have the ability to work on some more meaningful and fulfilling types of initiatives that are actually going to help the planet. So I'm super excited about this.
I'm just curious, Karen, are there any tips or tricks you can provide our listeners as AI kind of hits us, you know, slap us across the face? And, you know, we used to hear, before you do anything, take three deep breaths, gain your composure, and then go attack something or whatever the challenge is. Any tips you can share?
Yeah, I mean, I do a lot of proactive things to regulate my nervous system. I practice something called Qigong every morning that just helps get the energy moving.
There's some apps.
Qigong.
Okay, Qigong.
Yep. And there's an app I use. It's called Positive Prime. And it actually just, it's a 3-minute video, but it helps your brain positively prime to look for the good, because our brain is so wired to look for the dangers and the threats. And so I think there's some really proactive things that we can be doing. Again, it's a priming, right? Because again, our brain is predicting threat. And so we want it to start to predict that our environment is safe. In the moment, you know, again, it's really important that we stay present, because if we're present, then we can catch the signals that our body is giving us. Because when our body detects threat, it puts us into that you know, stress response state, fight, flight, freeze, fawn, functional freeze. And when that happens, our body sends a signal. So it may be like some people experiencing as their chest tightens, or they get, you know, flushed, or their heart starts to race. I always feel it in my throat. There's like a lump in my throat, I feel like. So you have to pay attention to what those body cues are, because that's the point that you can take a step back and give yourself a pause. And then you can actually like calm your nervous system down. It's only 90 seconds. Our body was only designed to stay in that escalated state for 90 seconds. Unfortunately, because we don't notice the cues, because we're not present in our body, we're either oftentimes ruminating about the past or worrying about the future. And so we miss it. And so we stay in that cycle. And that's where so much stress comes from, is because we're in this elevated state that was only supposed to last for 90 seconds.
Interesting. You know, many of our entrepreneurs these days, they're brilliant. They got great ideas. They have a great experience. But yet, they're afraid to be seen. They're afraid to go out and maybe step on the stage or get the word out, or even just get onto a podcast. What could you suggest that they can do to get beyond that?
Yeah, I would say that I think it's important to acknowledge that fear makes sense. Again, when you think about what we were hardwired for, we're hardwired for acceptance and belonging. Again, it goes all the way back to tribal days. If you got kicked out of the tribe, that was not a good strategy for you to have, right? So that's still hardwired in us. So most of us also had, you know, conditioned growing up with like these things that were said to us from our authority figures: don't be too much, quiet down, don't show off, right? And so our nervous system learned these rules. And so now, again, as adults, and we want to, you know, take our message further into the world and use our voice, we have an internal operating system that's saying, but that's not safe. You gave me an instruction a long time ago that said, you don't want to do that. That's not safe. So that's where we have to really stop and say, we have to do some updating. Like, I have to give my resistance. I actually do something really cool with my clients where we reverse engineer resistance. And because the resistance is trying to protect a value that's important to you. So you just have to find that value. And you need to give your resistance a new role, a supportive role that's actually going to help you accomplish the things that you want to do. And it's going to protect that value. It's just going to do it in a more supportive way.
One of the questions I used to ask my sales teams when I was in corporate is, how many of you are in sales? Or I just ask things in general. And or if I was in front of a group of people and asked them that question, then maybe half the audience would raise their hands. But in reality, this is kind of going back to your nervous system, is everyone's in sales, but they just don't recognize it because you're selling yourself every day. You're selling yourself to your boss. You're selling yourself to your spouse or to your children. Is that part of the nervous system that we've kind of built into our past as well, that we don't consider ourselves visible to others that way?
Yeah, I mean, that's very much identity, right? We have an identity of who we believe ourselves to be. And when we try to take action that doesn't match that, that's where we feel that tension and that resistance. And I really look at identity as much more fluid than I think that we've been conditioned to look at it. I look at it as your identity is really just a snapshot of whatever actions you're taking. Because if I'm, you know, somebody that wants to work out, but every time my alarm goes off, I hit snooze, I'm not going to think of myself as somebody that prioritizes working out. And so I'm not building that habit of getting up and going to the gym. I'm not taking the actions. I'm building the habits of and the identity of somebody who likes to stay in bed and be comfortable. I have a girlfriend who, you know, she gets up every day at 4 o'clock, and it would be odd to her not to do that, because she's taken the actions so many times over and over again. That's just become her identity. And so it's really helpful, I think, to break down identity and just look at, what actions are you taking? Are you, you know, you say that you want to, you know, spread your message further. What actions are you taking to do that? And if you're not, then that's where we just have to go back and break down some of the belief structures that have been in place, you know, from a very long time ago.
So how do we add on that capacity without adding pressure onto ourselves?
It's about small steps. So when I work with clients, we set up micro experiments, because, you know, if we try to take too big of an action, then it's just going to shut things down. And if it's too small of an action, our brain's not going to register that we even did anything to update that prediction model. So it's all about setting up very small steps and just, you know, taking that and knowing you're going to be uncomfortable. Like, you know, I always have my clients name that feeling, like, you're going to be uncomfortable because you're going to take the action. So let's already establish that. Let's talk about what that's going to feel like. So when it comes up, it's not a surprise. And you're just going to allow it, right? We're not looking to push down our feelings and not feel anything. Quite the opposite, actually. We've done that for a very long time, and that hasn't benefited us. You know, a lot of us have these unprocessed emotions from a very long time ago, and that's causing a lot of issues for us. So we want to feel our feelings, but we don't want to become our feelings. It's like we almost want to observe them as, you know, kind of like we're looking at them from, you know, different eyes, that it's not us that it's happening to. We're just observing it's happening. And so we can say, okay, thank you for showing up, fear or anger or sadness or whatever it is. I'm going to go ahead and still do this thing anyway, because this is important to me. And so that's what it takes. It just takes that consistency of action to build the new predictive behaviors. And that's when the whole system gets updated.
Wow, that's awesome. And if there's really one mindset shift that you want every business owner to take away from our conversation today, what would that be?
I think it would be to stop asking, why won't I do this, and start asking, what does my system believe will happen if I do? I talk a lot about, we just need to get curious, because that one question can change everything. Because the moment you stop treating your patterns like they're a character flaw and you start treating them as something more mechanical, then we step out of the story, right? We've created these stories about who we are, and that's where our limiting beliefs come from, and that stops us from taking action. So Just be curious. Like, don't assume that it's something wrong with you. Assume that there's just a pattern that needs to be upgraded, and treat it like a, you know, I always like create these hypotheses. Like, I'm just going to be curious to see what would happen if, you know, I wanted to make, you know, two times what I'm making now. I'm just going to be curious about that. It takes the pressure off and it makes it more of like an experiment.
Karen, this conversation that gives entrepreneurs a completely different look at growth. Honestly, one that I've never really experienced or even been trained on or even thought of in my career. But it does remind us that authority is not just built through louder marketing or more visibility. It's built through the capacity to stay steady, clear, and aligned as the stakes get higher. Karen, if people wanted to find you, what's the best way they can reach out and learn more about what you do and your services that you provide?
Yeah, I'm right in the middle of upgrading my website. So right now, if people wanted to reach out, they can just reach out to me on email. It's Karen at Atmology, Atmology, which actually means the study of one's true self. But it's Karen at Atmology.net.
Awesome. Karen, thank you so much for joining me on the Authority Playbook. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and thank you for bringing this conversation into the business space in such a powerful way. And for everyone watching, if this episode challenged the way you think about growth, visibility, and leadership, take a moment to ask yourself, am I the only one building the strategy, or am I also building the capacity to hold the success that I want? I'm Jeff Brandeis, and this is the Authority Playbook. I'll see you next time. Thank you for joining.